Welcome to the Pure Flix Podcast, a show brought to you by PureFlix.com. PureFlix.com, the faith, family, and fun video streaming service. Get ready for uplifting news, scripture, movie reviews, and interviews with some of your favorite actors, authors, and pastors. Let's get started.
Hey, what's going on? It's Billy Hollowell, and welcome to the Pure Flix Podcast. Today, we are having U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos on the show. We're going to be talking about her faith, her work, and really her passion for education. So you're going to get a chance to hear from her, and that's a really exciting interview. But before we dive into talking with Secretary DeVos, I think we got to address the elephant in the room, and it's the topic that everybody is talking about right now. It's the coronavirus. A lot of people around the world, very concerned, very nervous, very anxious about this disease. And I just wanted to remind all of us, you know, when we read through the Bible, and it's so tough, right? Because there's so much in life to worry about. But when we read through the scriptures, we are repeatedly told not to worry. And I wanted to share just a couple of scriptures with you because there are things that I've been thinking through, you know, as everyone rushes out to the store to buy hand sanitizer and panics about what's going on. You know, it's good to be prepared, but I think we also have to remember that as Christians, we have to trust in God. And so you look at 2 Timothy 1:7, and I just want to read this verse for you. It reads, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." And that is one of those incredible verses that brings us back down to earth, because whether it's coronavirus or some other piece of chaos or struggle in our lives, in our loved ones' lives, in our children's lives, there is so much to worry about. There is no shortage of things to panic about. But yet, most of what we worry about never happens. I was just driving by a church this morning here in New York, and there was a sign out, and it really struck me. And the sign said, "The majority of what you worry about will never come true or will never happen." And it just got me thinking. My pastor also was preaching about this weekend. We've got to really rely on prayer. And if you go over to insider.pureflix.com, you'll actually have a chance to dive in to Colossians. I've been working through a Bible study on Colossians. And when you get to Colossians 4, verse 2, there's another really powerful Bible verse. It reads, "Devote yourselves to prayer, being watchful and thankful." I just think we've got to devote ourselves to prayer when things are uncertain, when things are chaotic, you know, when we're not sure where to turn, we know we have God. We can turn to Him, and we need to do that. So I just wanted to drop that reminder because I think a lot of us are worried and panicked about coronavirus or maybe about other things. Maybe you're not worried about it. You know, you say, hey, you got a 96% survival rate, if not more, and there are bigger things going on in your life. Trust in God, turn to prayer, turn everything over to Him. Now, we're going to be right back with more of the Pure Flix Podcast in just a moment, and you will be hearing from U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. Welcome back to the Pure Flix Podcast. I am Billy Hollowell, and with no further ado, I would like to welcome Secretary DeVos to the podcast.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today.
Happy to join you, Billy. Thanks.
Well, you know, one thing that we've been trying to do is tell people's stories. You know, who are people in the public eye that we see headlines and we read stories, but, you know, my sense is we don't always know the backstory, right? Or the passion or where the interest in an issue comes from. And so I wanted to kind of start with your faith story and where that faith journey started for you.
Well, I was fortunate to be born into a family that raised me to make my faith my own, but I had exposure from my first memories to weekly church services, the Christian Reformed Church, which is primarily in West Michigan and other Dutch enclaves across the country. But my faith really became my own when I was a late teen, you know, early 20s, and I'm grateful to have had that foundation, but am grateful to have had continued challenges to help me keep growing.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think, you know, for me too, growing up in a Christian home, you kind of go through the act of it. You know, you go to church every week. And for me, it was probably when I was 20, 22 maybe, where I said, wait a minute, you know, is this my own, right? Do I really believe all of these things? I know I've been going to church my whole life. And, you know, arriving at that for yourself is such an important thing, right?
It is. Yes, it is.
So, at what point for you, and I did not know that your mom was a public school teacher, so I found that really interesting. At what point for you was education becoming a passion area?
Well, my experience, my personal experience in K-12 years was one, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't great. And I went to a Christian school and I had, you know, some wonderful teachers and I had some study areas, some classes that I really enjoyed. But I don't, ultimately, upon reflection, don't think I was really ultimately challenged as much as I should have been or could have been through those years. But my passion around education really grew when my oldest son, who's just about 38, was starting kindergarten. And my husband and I knew we were going to be able to send our children wherever we wanted to. But I started getting involved with a small Christian school in the heart of our city, volunteering there and spending more and more time there. And the more I did and was there mentoring, the more I realized that for every family that had their child there, there were probably 10 or 20 other families in that neighborhood who longed to have their children in a place like that. And so we started supporting scholarships for students, and then I really realized this is a policy issue because those families don't have the economic means to be able to make that choice and that decision, and yet their children are every bit as special and precious as mine are. And so that really spurred my interest in what I refer to as education freedom, school choice very broadly.
And you also, for 15 years, you were an in-school mentor for at-risk kids, which is also something else. You know, reading over your bio, I didn't realize that. And this is why when I said to you, it's like you want to get to know people because you don't hear these things. You see news stories and, okay, there's a policy discussion in this news story, but it's not getting to the heart of who this person is. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was very formative and very, very beneficial for me. I still have a great relationship with the second of the two young ladies that I started mentoring. I started mentoring her when she was in first grade, and she's now a sophomore in college.
Oh, wow.
I don't think she would have even made it through high school, frankly, if not for my engagement in her life. And so I'm very proud of her. I continue to encourage her to become everything God meant her to be. And it was a thrill to be able to be a part of her life and of the other young lady that I worked with as well.
That's incredible. And in what ways, because it's so funny when we talk about education and then we talk about our faith, I feel like people in this country try to separate things out. Oh, your faith isn't part. Well, no, it is. Your faith impacts everything you do. And so for you, what role does faith play in your views on education and how it should be for people in this country?
Well, it's foundational to everything I do. I firmly believe every single child is a uniquely created individual with great potential. And there are too many kids that are just not able to develop that full potential because they are in a place that simply is not cultivating that for whatever reason. And, this is not to diminish in any way the schools across this country, many teachers who are doing an awesome job really challenging the kids that they are charged with. But, you know, kids are different. They learn differently. And a one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter approach simply doesn't work. It doesn't work for anyone, no matter where they are, no matter what age. And, we enjoy freedom in almost every other area of our life, making choices and decisions that work for us. And yet the K-12 years for, almost a century and a half here have been very much a cookie cutter, one size fits all approach. And it's time to change that.
Yeah. And education is one of the most important things that we could talk about, right? For our kids, you think about every piece of information that goes into their mind, how they learn, how they're taught. And I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I see it already, with obviously the 4-year-old's in pre-K, in a private school, and our 7-year-old's in public school and in the suburbs. And I see kind of what she's learning, how she's learning. And also as a parent trying to keep up with that and, oh, okay, this is how they're teaching this. I didn't learn it this way, right? And so, but it's the most important issue, one of them. And so to be having this conversation is so essential for us.
Well, it is. And when you think about the fact that young people today represent 100% of our country's future and the potential there, we need to make sure that every single one of them has the opportunity to fully develop their gifts and talents innate within them.
What motivated you to become Secretary of Education? It's a big decision to make.
Well, it's not something I ever expected for myself. And when the opportunity arose, because of everything I'd done for three decades before to advocate for families and children who, frankly, haven't had a voice in the system, it was very much a no-brainer. It was like, this opportunity is here. How could I not do this? How could I not do this?
Yeah, and now you're a few years into it, and it really is incredible. When you look at the past few decades, and I was just pulling up numbers because I'm curious, you know, where we fall compared to other countries. And when you look at that trajectory downward, what do you think has been driving that? Because it just seems to have continued to kind of trail down.
Well, I think it has been a system that has continued to ossify. And, you know, big, large, complex systems and organizations don't change easily. And they don't recognize uniqueness. They don't recognize differences in terms of, how you learn and ability. So it is a system that exists to really serve itself, not do what's best for individual children.
Yeah, and that's where the whole choice conversation comes in. And it sparks such a conversation and a controversy, right? But it seems like that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants a choice, right, in their lives, as you were saying, to do anything that they want to do. So why do you think it's so important in education, choice?
Well, because I think, for one thing, education is foundational to everything else in life. And I know that the reflexive reaction, negative reaction about the concept of choice in education is more based in fear than it is in fact. And where choices have been introduced in a meaningful way at a reasonable scale, I cite Florida as being the state farthest along in this regard. Actually, achievement for kids across the board has improved. And I think it's pretty easily explained because kids are finding the right fit for them. And it looks different for, one student versus another. If I learn in a hands-on manner, and that's the best avenue for me to pursue, I have the opportunity to do that in Florida. And if I learn best by reading and memorizing and, a more, I would say, traditional approach, then I have the opportunity to do that. But we shouldn't be trying to force fit every student into one kind of a box to prop up a system that simply isn't working for too many kids. Then it's about adults. It's not about kids.
Yeah, well, and that's the interesting. There's so many factors in this, right? You know, you're not just talking about the kids. You have unions, and there's a lot of negotiating factors and districts and all of that. I grew up in Rochester, New York, and one of the things that struck me when I was a teenager was in the city of Rochester, and I don't know what it's like now, but they had the School of the Arts. They actually were experimenting with these different types of schools. The School Without Walls is another one that comes to mind, where they were testing this out, and they were public schools, but, you know, the art school, you would go there, and the arts was the focus, kind of everything was centered around that. And it was really interesting to me to think, I grew up in the suburbs. We had one school. There wasn't that sort of, ability to choose and kind of opt into different things that worked. And so it seems that, people have tried this and they continue to. What are some of the things you would do to fix the system and the things you want to see happen?
Well, states are entertaining policy change to introduce more freedom for families. And we also have a proposal from the administration at the federal level. The president and the administration have advanced it's called Education Freedom Scholarship Initiative. And what it would do is allow for more than a million kids across this country the freedom to find their fit. And the mechanics of it are simple. It would create a federal tax credit, and it would be voluntarily contributed to, the vehicle being 501c3 charitable scholarship-granting organizations named by states that chose to participate. So everything about it voluntary, nothing mandatory. And states that chose to participate then would receive those funds into these scholarship-granting organizations, and they would use them for students with directly for families within those states to find their fit. And so I like to encourage people to think much more broadly about what freedom and choices can look like. And for people who have large rural areas or large rural populations in their state, maybe, you know, it doesn't make sense to say you're going to build another alternative school next to your small rural high school. But I'll bet there's a handful of students in that high school that would like to take a class that the school can't offer. There's no reason they couldn't get a scholarship to take a course virtually by one of the finest teachers somewhere in the world and do that right there in their rural high school. Or maybe they have a handful of students there that learn differently. There's no reason they couldn't start a micro school right there in that school building. So really thinking broadly about what this could look like and how it could be facilitated for kids across the country. And we're getting lots of good support at the congressional level. It's a climb politically because of the opposition by the entrenched forces. But again, I think that's so much based on fear of the unknown, not based in reality. And I think, great teachers are going to be highly valued in a system of freedom and choices, and they're going to have much greater opportunities themselves to find a fit if the system in which they're working isn't working for them.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting too, because we see innovation is something that's so important in every sector. And there's so many times I look at healthcare or education, it's like, why can't people get in a room and talk and come up with ideas and share those ideas? And it sounds like that's driving a lot of this. You know, these, and I know there's a lot of fear too. It's whenever there's discussion about money, well, you're going to take it away from the public sector. And what you're describing doesn't sound like that. It's scholarships. It's a new way of funding these new ideas,
right,
which I think
right.
is really intriguing.
And I think, you know, we should think about it in terms of kids with backpacks and, the resources for their education already designated for their education, following them to wherever is going to work for them to learn and thrive.
Well, I so appreciate this. It's been incredible getting a chance to talk with you. Is there anything, and this is sort of it's a strange question, but I like to ask this of people in a position like yours, is if you could tell people anything about yourself, just something you'd want people to know about you and your passion maybe for education that you feel like doesn't get out there enough. I don't know. Mm-hmm. If there's any you'd say there.
I think there have been a lot of misconceptions, misperceptions sown about me. But the reality is that my heart is with kids, and I'm for them and for their futures. And I'm for their parents to have the kind of opportunity to make the choices that I was able to make for my kids.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Billy.
We'll be right back with more of the Pure Flix podcast. Did you know you can access thousands of entertaining and inspiring faith and family-friendly TV shows, movies, and original series? It's simple. Just log on to pureflix.com right now to start your free one-month trial. From kids' content to some of the most uplifting films, we've got your entire family covered. Sign up today. And we're back with more of the Pure Flix podcast.
Welcome back to the Pure Flix podcast. So that interview was really fascinating. One of the things I've been passionate about is trying to get an understanding of who our leaders are. Who are these people who we see in the headlines? We know they've been either nominated or elected to a position of power, but what's their background? What's their area of passion? Why do they care about serving where they're serving? And so we're going to be doing some more of those types of interviews. It was also interesting to hear the secretary's position on education and get a little bit of a sense of where she's hoping to move things in this country. So whether you agree or disagree, it's always fascinating to hear from these people. I love people's stories, right? Where did you come from? How did you get where you are? And what are you hoping to accomplish from here on? And so that was the goal of that interview. I hope you enjoyed that. Please be sure to also head over to pureflix.com. We have thousands of movies, TV shows, original series, and so much more. With Easter coming, there's some great Easter content. There is just no shortage of content for the family, for the kids, for you, dramas, comedies, the whole nine yards. Be sure to head over to pureflix.com for your free trial today and tune in next week for another episode of the Pure Flix podcast.
That's all for today's podcast. You can follow Pure Flix on Facebook at facebook.com/pureflix and on Twitter at pureflix. And be sure to log on today to pureflix.com for your free month of access to thousands of faith and family-friendly movies and TV shows. Thanks for listening to the Pure Flix podcast.